by facts and driven by truth. Broadcasting live from beautiful British Columbia, it's Roadkill Radio. And now, here are your hosts, Gary Simpson and Terry O'Neill.
There. Thanks for joining us again tonight. I'm Terry O'Neill. That's Kerry Simpson, of course. And we survived the first federal leaders debate. Both of us watched it tonight, and we'll be talking about that in just a minute or two with our first guest, Ezra Levant. He's about to start his own show on the Sun News Network. After talking with Ezra, we'll be talking with a guy who wrote us a very fascinating letter and introduced us to a very interesting issue as well. His name is Clint Hutton. So we'll be talking with him, and I'll save the subject matter as a bit of a surprise for you. And other matters.
Oh, you are such a tease, Terry O'Neill. Such a tease.
Other matters that have gotten under our skin of late and in other parts of our anatomy. Yeah.
And we'll save that for later.
That's
too,
right. And finally, at the end of the show, we'll be talking to Michael Vaughn. She is the policy director for the BC Civil Liberties Association. And she'll be talking about how the BC government's new action plan called Citizens at the Center, Government 2.0, will require massive amounts of your taxed income to finance a massive, two massives there, government invasion of your privacy. And we can trust government, can't we, Kerry? Okay. You almost choked there. I'm glad you didn't have any water in your mouth.
It's not often somebody renders me speechless, Terry O'Neill.
We could have had the classic spit take there. I'm glad we didn't anyway, yes.
So and it would be the spit and choke.
That's right. Yeah. And, of course, throughout the course of the evening tonight, please feel free to email us at roadkillradio@live.ca. We love to get your emails, and we'll read them on the air, ask the questions of our guests, whatever. And you could also try calling at 604-525-4167. And so without further ado, we welcome to the show Ezra Levant. Ezra, are you there?
Not yet.
Oh, Ezra's not there yet.
They're dingling away.
Oh, they're phoning him up right now because normally we chat for 5 or 10 minutes and
we
wanted to get right in
on
it.
But with Ezra, we know a little bit to say.
You know, and Ezra's probably still adjusting to Toronto time as well, so we don't want to keep him up too late.
Poor darling.
That's right.
Yeah. Oh, God forbid if he should be in a weakened state.
That's right. Yeah. So, of course, Ezra was my colleague slash boss employer at the Western Standard magazine, where I labored for 3 or 4 years. How long was it? As a senior writer under primarily editor-in-chief Kevin Libben, who's now with the National Post. And it was a magazine that Ezra launched from scratch, and I was in on the ground floor and left in the basement, I guess. The magazine went broke.
But you're still walking.
That's right. I didn't take a jump off the top floor anyway, thank
goodness.
Yeah,
but now you're on Roadkill Radio.
Yeah, that's right. You know, I still have a national audience.
We saw you wandering out there after you emerged from the basement.
That's right. So is Ezra with us? Hi, Ezra.
I'm here.
Ezra, I've got a really special introduction saved up for you tonight.
Okay, you know what? Can we get the volume cranked up because I can barely hear you.
Okay, just a minute.
Volume cranked up, and I'm looking at our technicians.
I'm cranking my volume up.
Okay, now I can hear you better.
Okay, that's fantastic. Well, you know, Ezra, I'm going to call you the man who has sacrificed more for more different causes than just about anybody in Canada. First off, you sacrificed a brilliant law career for a career in politics. But then you had to sacrifice your career in politics for the wishes of the leaders. Stand aside and let Stephen Harper run. So then you're back in law, and you had to sacrifice that for a career in publishing because a higher duty called. But then you had to sacrifice the career in publishing to become a crusader against human rights legislation. And finally, you've had to sacrifice that very lucrative career as an anti-human rights commission crusader for a career in Toronto, paying the ultimate sacrifice, having to move to Toronto. You probably weren't even allowed to take your Hummer with you.
You know what? You make it sound like I've sacrificed a lot. Another way of looking at it is I just get fired.
Yeah.
I just can't hold down a job.
Okay, yes. Yeah. Well, I could have put it that way.
Yeah, but really, we really, really, really want to know about the Hummer, Ezra. Did the Hummer make it to Toronto?
No, you know what? The Hummer was a great vehicle when I was a single fellow, but now with two kids, it's all minivans as far as the eye can see.
Oh, I see. So it was kind of a babe magnet for you for a while, wasn't it?
Well, I guess it worked since I got hitched.
Yeah, good stuff.
Well, we were wondering if a Hummer actually would fit on a road in Toronto, so I guess we'll have to wait.
That's right. So anyway, Ezra has moved to Toronto because he's about to start next Monday on a daily show on the new Sun News Network. Now, you know, you go to the Sun News Network website, and they've got all sorts of pictures of all their celebrities on there. But for some reason, they don't have a picture of their biggest celebrity, which is you, on the front page anyway. And there's no link to what time your show's going to be on, how long it's going to last, and what exactly the theme of it will be. So why don't you fill us in?
Okay, sure. You know, I think I think they don't have a picture of me because they're trying to drive traffic instead of drive traffic away. I'm going to have a daily show every day, every weekday at 5 p.m. Eastern time, which is 2 p.m. in B.C., and then it's going to be repeated at night. I think it's 10 or 11 Eastern, so do the math. That would be
so then prime time in B.C. at that stage then.
Yeah, I'm really excited about that. Because
and how long is that show going to be, an hour?
It's an hour a day, which, you know, that's a lot of time to fill every day, but there's so much to talk about. I'll tell you, the theme of the show is simple. It's one word. Freedom. It's the interface between the individual and the state. So you can imagine all the things that touches on, from freedom of speech to freedom of religion to the right to be free from warrantless search and seizures. I mean, it's about strengthening our fundamental freedoms. And it, obviously I'll talk about other news today, the election campaign, foreign affairs, things like that. But I think it's going to be a little bit fun, a little bit rambunctious. And I'm pretty sure it's going to be a little different than the Tweedledee, Tweedledum, bland, liberal consensus media you get on Newsnet.
Yeah, no. Now, listen, I had a thought here. Stephen Colbert has a show on the Comedy Network that is a parody of a conservative television show. I would think that it would be the height of intelligence to have a parody of Stephen Colbert's parody. And we could call it the Ezra Levant Freedom Show.
Well, the thing is, I don't want to be, I don't want to do a parody of a liberal talk show, because that's just a bunch of, it's just three Torontonians or Ottawa people nodding in agreement very piously about how Stephen Harper is a Neanderthal, and we need more gun control for those evil duck hunters, and Omar Khadr is a folk hero. Those damn Americans, at least if it's George Bush, or those wonderful Americans if it's Barack Obama. I mean, just to do a parody of a liberal show would just be unwatchable. But to do a parody of a conservative show, that's just, why don't I just do a conservative show?
Okay.
So that's what I'm going to try and do.
All right. Well done.
Well, I like the fact it's going to be rambunctious, Ezra. I would expect nothing less from you. And so much of what goes on in Canadian media is so boring. Oh, that's because it's all liberal.
Okay. Hey, but the big question is, are you going to have the ability to do double enders with guests in Vancouver?
Absolutely. In fact, it's funny you say that. I was thinking about you guys, because you guys are going to hold down the deep west.
That's right.
And, you need your allies out here, Ezra.
We've been doing 2 weeks of full-on dress rehearsals out here. I mean, coming in every morning, doing the shows, practicing, you know, doing everything other than broadcasting it. So we have the ability to talk to folks around the country.
Super.
And you know, that'll only grow. And you know, just because we don't have, I mean, and remember, we have even though we're not like the other guys with a TV station in every town, we've got the Sun media chain of newspapers, so we have reporters most everywhere. Even in Vancouver, we have 24 Hours, which is a daily free transit mag. So we do have a little studio out in Vancouver. I think that our channel is going to be Western-centric, even though, yes, we are based in Toronto, and we're owned by a company based in Montreal called Quebecor. I think if you look at the talent on the show, it's very oriented to Western Canada.
Well, you know, Western Canada has given birth to so many great journalists over the years. You know, we're right up to, you know, Kenneth White, published writer-in-chief of Maclean's magazine, and Ted Byfield, and My goodness, our old colleague Kevin Libman is doing a great job at the National Post, too. So it's all sorts of, and no surprise that there's a lot of great broadcast journalists coming out of the West as well, Ezra. One of the things that I thought we should talk about right off the top, because it's very topical, is the federal leaders debate. I watched it tonight because I knew I was doing the show tonight, and therefore I had to watch it. Normally, I would check in for a few minutes here and there because, frankly, they get to be almost like ritualized theater. It's not much different than professional wrestling these days. Everybody's got their scripts. Everybody knows when to jump off the top rope.
You are so right. I was trying to think of something that I could equate it to, but that's it.
Okay,
it's
professional.
Scripted.
That's right. So anyway, Ezra, that's my thought. Now, of course, Carrie now agrees with me. So are you going to make it unanimous?
Well, you know, I think that Jack Layton sort of has the same role he's been doing every time, because I don't think it's credible to people that he is going to be the next prime minister, so he's got to be sort of the yappy, principled leftist. But I thought he did not a bad job. I thought he actually communicated fairly well tonight. What was funny about Michael Ignatieff is, I mean, he had some energy and he had some passion, but he focused on insider trivia that I just don't think ordinary Canadians give a damn about. I mean, talking about this obscure NGO called Rights and Democracy that had an internal board of directors fight. The fact that, I mean, if you're Michael Ignatieff, really, this is the first time most Canadians have actually paid attention to. And I know that sounds surprising because a lot of the folks who are listening are political insiders.
Good point.
We've been following Ignatieff for 5 years. But, I mean, come on. Do severely normal Canadians know anything about him other than maybe the $10 million that the Conservatives have dropped on negative ads?
Yeah. I tell you, those have had an impact. I was getting my oil changed a few weeks ago, and that's the first thing out of the mouth of this guy. That Ignatieff guy, he doesn't seem like a very good guy.
You know, the thing is, he hasn't had a chance to, I mean, people just weren't paying attention to politics until now. And you really, when you're introducing yourself to Mr. Joe and Jane Average, you want to talk about some obscure inside baseball personality thing that's so hard to explain I can't even say it in 5 minutes. And the problem there is that he's got this echo chamber in the parliamentary press gallery who love him, or even if they don't love him, they certainly hate Stephen Harper.
Yeah.
And you've got, I mean, if you look at the, I mean, look, I know how tough it is to be in opposition. I worked for Preston Manning in the 90s when we had a minority, when Cretchen had a majority, and we knew we would lose everything in advance. We didn't have the power to make announcements, so it was desperate to get media attention. So anything a journalist would cover that we would do, we would want to do a lot more of it just to get coverage. I get it. I understand it. But the problem is journalists are a terrible focus group for Joe and Jane Average because they're all elite, insider, snobby, condescending.
And as we know out here from Bill Good, there's a whole large section of population that doesn't exist. That was his classic line when he was talking to Marcy McDonald. You know, we didn't know these people exist. But Ezra, I think it's worse than that for Ignatieff. I think that people have written him off, and they want to politically spank him for, you know, they blame him for this election that nobody wants to be playing at. They want to be going about with their lives, not spending $300 million or whatever outrageous amount it is. I think there's a political spanking in the making. They're not interested in watching elections or the debate from the leaders. They just want retribution at this point.
You know, I think that's right. And I think that would have happened no matter how tonight's debate went. But I think tonight's debate really emphasized that Michael Ignatieff, he's not connecting on the issues that, I mean, Canadians are still worried about the world recession that we're coming out of first and best. But I think that really is on the minds of people.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know, I just don't think he used his opportunity well, so it falls back to the default position of people saying, why are we having this election again?
Mm-hmm.
And Harper, I think, managed to turn it around on the opposition, saying, look at you guys bickering and quarreling. I mean, I don't know if you noticed Harper, he really used a low talker voice, a real, you know, as my kids would say, an inside voice, not an outside, outdoors voice. He used his inside voice. He was so calm and so quiet. He was barely whispering, to be so different from the bickering, accusatory opposition. And I think that in itself made a point. Here you've got three yappy little puppy dogs who were clamoring for attention, clamoring for an election, and when they have a chance to express why, they just call Harper a bunch of names and talk about obscure insider things, whereas Harper's saying, you know what, guys? We're just coming out of a recession. We got bigger things to do. What the hell is this all about? And because they didn't change that narrative, I think Harper won. It wasn't a slam dunk by Harper, but he did. When you're 10 points ahead and the election's half over, you don't need a slam dunk.
Yeah,
we were talking about that at the beginning
Ezra,
of the
I'd
show.
Agree. That's exactly the points that we were talking about, that he stood his ground. He was quite, I mean, there were times when I was, biting my tongue or something. I wanted to sort of snap back at Iggy or at Leighton or something like that. When they were making some snide comment or obviously putting mega spin on some point of the parliament. And then, go back, go and get him, sick him and smack him down. And no, Harper just calm, cool, and collected.
He set himself apart.
He did. He has come across quite prime ministerial in just about all the debates, I guess, over the last several years. And I would think that tonight's was even more so. Like, I'm cool, I'm calm, I can be trusted, and that really did come across. And of course, you listen immediately, the radio headlines right after was Michael Ignatieff criticized Harper for this, and Leighton criticized Harper for that, and then the next newscast was no knockout punches. There's an invented one.
I liked your term, snide. It was a snipe and snide session, is what it was from the three Iggy clan. Harper was prime ministerial. He did set himself apart, and I agree with you, Ezra. Yeah. He came across as thoughtful, and he wasn't just going to get pulled into the fray, which is what we want in a leader.
But Ezra, I tell you though, I was deeply disappointed that all four of the candidates didn't take the opportunity to address the absence of the Green Party from the debate, because Canadians should have the right to look at the Green Party's platform, to hear the Green Party leader speak, and in doing so, they could find out that the Green Party stands for true democracy. And to ensure that citizenship is equal, they are demanding social justice and equity, which are the cornerstones for democracy. And they say that Canadian democracy is more secure when human rights are respected, starting with the First Nations and the Indigenous people of this continent, Turtle Island.
You know what? I love living on Turtle Island.
Isn't it a wonderful place? And, if we're on Turtle Island, does that mean Atlas is standing on our back and then Atlas is holding up the rest of the world?
You're finally catching on,
yeah,
Terry.
That's right.
Is it all coming together for you
I'd
now?
Have to change my business cards and my stationery.
That's right.
Scratching off. First I scratched off Calgary, Toronto. Now I'm writing Turtle Island.
That's right.
And I don't know what the hell's happening with Canada Post. I'm not getting any of my letters.
Yeah, that's crazy.
That's fine. And the police asked, where are you from? I just said, Turtle Island.
And they can track you down there.
Is it Turtle Island?
That's right.
I called him a racist, actually. Now, you know what? The thing about Elizabeth May is she is like the three of us. She likes a good debate. She likes the kibitz. She's a pundit, just like the three of us. She's never elected an MP, just like the three of us have not. But she's got an advantage that the three of us don't have. We have to either indulge our punditry as a hobby or find someone to pay us. She gets $1.9 million a year from the taxpayer for a political subsidy, because, as you know, every party gets about $2 per vote. That's why the Green Party runs 300 candidates.
That's right.
They have a hope in hell of winning. But because it's just a way to fundraise $1.9 million a year. That's twice as much money as she raises in donations. So she is really a tax-funded, government-subsidized pundit. And you know what? The TV consortium said, yeah, no. And Preston Manning, he ran for office in 1988 with the Reform Party. He wasn't let in to the leaders' debates in 88. It was only in 93, after Deborah Gray and Stan Waters had seats in Parliament, that he was let in. So Preston wasn't let in. Why the heck should Elizabeth May? Because the CBC likes her so much.
I want to put a point to you that I just remembered, that one of my sons who's all for democratic reform and real power to the people, says that, you know, although in other areas he supports the conservative government, on the area, in the issue of taking money away from the parties, the $2 per vote, he says, you know what, that is the one way that voters can actually have some direct democratic input into the system. That's the one way that in this crazy, wonderful, glorious parliamentary system of ours, where it's the first past the post and you can get a conservative, you can get a majority government with 40% of the vote or even 39% of the vote. It's the one way where somebody who votes for a party with no chance of winning, or maybe a party with a chance that doesn't win, can still have their vote worth something. Their vote's actually worth $2 to the party of their choice. And he says, you know, that's in a time when so many voters feel disconnected from Parliament, from the system, so many voters feel alienated, they can go to the polls now and know that, yeah, you know what, I know the Green Party's not going to win, or I know the Libertarian Party's not going to win, but I'm going to vote for them because I want to make sure that they get $2.
Well,
so, you know, I wonder how many people, I mean, you got millions of voters, and I guess doing the math, almost a million voters voted for Elizabeth May, or maybe just over a million, I'd have to check. Mm-hmm. Were they really motivated by giving $2? I mean, it probably cost $2 worth of gas and parking and hassle to go vote. I get that argument, but what I really see it is as a subsidy, an alternative to getting support mm-hmm. financially. Take, mm-hmm. The biggest beneficiaries of these government subsidies for political parties is the Bloc Québécois.
Yeah.
And because they get to spend all their money concentrated in one province, they don't have to rent a plane. They don't have to buy expensive Toronto and Vancouver and Calgary and Edmonton TV ads. They just run it in really two major media markets. So they don't have to lift a finger for fundraising. They get their funds from taxpayers of Canada. And I just don't think that I should have to subsidize someone else's choice. If someone really thinks that $2 is important, there's no one in this country who can't afford a $2 donation. Give it yourself.
Okay.
You know, I call it an illegal tax. Put your son in a room with me, Terry. I'll fix him. You know, it's just the Quebec. We were talking about Duceppe earlier before the show, and I thought that he made a marvelous point when he talked about, you know, the focus of Ottawa is to benefit the bureaucrats, not Canadians. You know, he actually got my attention on that one, and Terry suggested that I could be their next candidate out here in the West. And I have a daughter-in-law that teaches French. I have a daughter that's learning to speak French, and I have a future son-in-law that is French. Well, so we figure I've got more credibility than a lot of their candidates.
You know, I mean, if we're talking about pundits and sheer entertainment value, I have always enjoyed Gilles Duceppe. His English, he's got a very slight accent, which I find quite endearing. His English is quite precise and a little bit formal, which is a nice touch. I find he's actually polite when he says, I have great respect for Canada, I just don't want to be part of it. That's flattering. And I think he has a liberty because, you know, there's really nothing at stake for him. So in that way, he's a pundit in these English debates. I mean, not a lot of Anglos in Montreal City are going to vote for him. So he can, I find he's always thoughtful. I mean, I disagree with him in many ways. But, you know, I bet you if the Bloc Québécois ran candidates throughout the country, they'd get votes and more cash like Elizabeth May.
That's right.
They'd get people who want them to leave to, oh, I believe that Quebec should have its own self-determination, therefore I'll vote for the Bloc in my riding. Or other people would say, I want Quebec the hell out of Canada,
yeah,
so I'm going to vote. So I think they'd win both ways, lovers and haters.
Well, yeah, exactly. I suggest the latter might prove very profitable out here.
Yeah, let them stand on their own 2 feet and see how they can protect their lovely culture when they have to pay for it themselves and not when Albertans have to pay for it. I think they would get a lot of support in Alberta for that. There was you mentioned Duceppe, Kerry, you mentioned Duceppe making a comment about Ottawa is just for the bureaucrats. Leighton made a comment during the debate, essentially accusing Harper of becoming Ottawashed.
Yes, which was
which was an expression that, that Ted Byfield, I think, came up with many years ago about how, conservative.
There's a conspiracy.
Yeah, Leighton I know. This is crazy. So, you know, like Westerners, conservative Westerners going to Ottawa and then suddenly becoming big spending centrists and everything. Well, essentially, Leighton was accusing Harper of that, which, but I guess Harper's not enough of that because, you know, everybody wanted more spending and higher taxes, it seemed, more social gerrymandering or social alchemy, I like
to
call it.
So he's been Ottawashed. We just don't know if it was with the right solution.
Well,
is that it?
Yeah, right. well, he's certainly not the, Ezra would attest to this. He's certainly not the man he was when he was president of the National Citizens Coalition. Mm. Next to all these other guys, he's the paragon of prudence and conservative values, but he really isn't. He's changed a lot, right, Ezra?
Well, I would put it to you that, and I think you alluded to this, the change came when the parties merged, the old Canadian Alliance and the Progressive Conservative parties merged, and I would put it to you that the change happened 7 years ago, not 7 weeks ago.
You remember the
cover story? I think that Western reformers made a decision en masse that after losing with Preston Manning so nobly, and you know we were so idealistic. Like I mentioned, I worked for the guy, and we lost every vote, but boy, we were pure, weren't we? And I think Stephen Harper said, you know what? Winning is better than losing, and if we win and we're 75% conservative, it's better than being 90% conservative and losing. Now, it's our job as commentators to pull the party as far to the right as possible, to resist their temptation to slouch to the center and be 51% conservatives or even 49% conservatives. But, you know, we take for granted things today that 5 years ago we would be shocked. I mean, defunding the court challenges program, reining in some of these goofier NGOs, changing multiculturalism from just plain old pork handouts to focusing on immigrant absorption and de-radicalization of certain groups, rebuilding the armed forces, cutting taxes, cutting the GST, cutting income taxes, cutting corporate taxes. I mean, I'm not pleased with what the government's doing on, on environmental regulations. I think they're heavy-handed, but nothing compared to what it would be under Schiff and Dion. There's about 10 things that, they're not great, but imagine if Harper hadn't been in power these past 5 years.
Well, I can add more to that, actually, because Real Women of Canada, and is there a more socially conservative group in Canada than the Real Women of Canada? I don't think so. They've come out with their election brochure entitled "Building a Strong Nation," where they compare the positions of the three major parties on 8 different issues: safety, law and order, non-medical use of drugs, euthanasia, family taxation, childcare, prostitution, special interest funding, and immigration and refugees. And in every one of these very important issues, the Conservatives have marked differences from the Liberals and the NDP. Look at euthanasia. Conservatives oppose physician-assisted suicide, will allow a free vote on the issue. Liberals support euthanasia. NDP support euthanasia. Child care. Conservatives directly pay to families $1,200 annually for each child under the age of 6, opposes national child care program. You know what the other parties. Prostitution supports, conservatives support the present prostitution law. Liberals and the NDP want decriminalization. Now, this is not, this is not a position that libertarians would support the conservatives on, but social conservatives certainly support the conservatives here. So from a social conservative point of view, I know there's hand-wringing, and there was a story in the press last week about social conservatives standing on the sidelines and kind of disappointed. But there, as you point out, Ezra, there have been substantial changes, and who knows how much worse it would have been with the Liberals or Liberal NDP coalition in power.
Well, listen, and it's not my job to be a defender of Stephen Harper, but for those who don't think he's conservative enough, I would say, look, he's had a minority government for 5 years. Only in the last year or so has he had the Senate in his hands. The court is still a majority holdover from the Cretchen-Martin days. The press gallery is so overwhelmingly liberal. Culturally, Canada is more liberal than the United States or than the Conservative Party. Mm-hmm. So you must take an incrementalist approach or you will fail. And we saw what happened when he overreached a bit to defund the political parties in December of 2008. He almost lost the government. And so I would say to people who are impatient, I would say, yeah, been there, tried that, called the Reform Party, gave Cretchen three majority governments. By the way, Cretchen won one of those majority governments with just 36%.
There you go.
So, you know, Stephen Harper is doing better than Jean Chrétien did. Jean Chrétien had the favor of a split right. Well, now we're enjoying we conservatives are enjoying the split left. In a way, I wish Elizabeth May had been on TV to drain, you know, a couple more percentage away from the Liberals and the NDP.
Yeah.
Now, well, she'll get a sympathy vote
yes,
now.
That's right. Listen, you're identifying yourself as a conservative. The people down at Fox News, they just say fair and balanced. You know, we're not conservative, we're not liberal, we're fair and balanced, but they're pretty conservative. Everybody seems to know that. Does Sun News Network come right out and say, listen, the mainstream media, I know Corey said this essentially, Corey Tenak, at the beginning when Sun News Network was first being talked about, that essentially, yeah, we are conservative and everybody else is wishy-washy mainstream downstream media liberal. Is that the way Sun News Network is presenting itself now, or is it just
I've heard Pierre Carl Pelletteau speak about the subject on several occasions in public, and he uses the word conservative.
Ah, okay.
He says if you want to know what the new Sun News Network is going to look like, pick up a copy of the Toronto Sun, the Calgary Sun, and what you'll see in the papers.
Not the Vancouver Sun, by the way. That's
no,
different.
That's a different company.
Yeah.
But now he says it's not only conservative, it's other things too. It's has got a working-class sensibility, it's populist, it's patriotic, it's irreverent. These are not necessarily conservative ideals, but one of its qualities is conservative. And if you look at the talent that will be animating this network, I point to Charles Adler, the great talk show host, well-known in radio. I point to Brian Lilly, who I think is probably the best scoop-getting reporter in Ottawa and excellent on conservative issues. So I say, look at who they're with, Theo Caldwell. He's got a very interesting show with a financial and trade focus. So look at the people. And I can tell you from working with the producers, too, there's a unity of purpose. I've heard the phrase a rebel network. I like that very much. We're rebels. And there's sort of a rule of thumb I heard another fellow say, which is we already have a CBC, which means, whoa, why would we do what they're doing? We already have $1 billion a year, completely unwatchable, stale, vanilla, bland, consensus media statement. Broadcaster, why would we do what they're doing? And you know, I use the word consensus media. I don't, the mainstream media, I use it sometimes just because you know, it's a popular phrase. Liberal media, yes, it's true. But to me, the biggest problem with Canadian journalism is the sameness of it. It's like they're harmonizing with each other. And I watch this because I follow Twitter and I watch the journalists chat amongst themselves throughout the day. It's like they're birds sort of through ultrasound sort of lining up their formation throughout the day. And so every night on TV and every morning in the papers, they're remarkably similar. And once in a while, the mob gets it right. But so often, their groupthink expresses itself in a liberal way. But the problem is the groupthink itself. I mean, there's no contrarianism on Omar Khadr, one of my favorite examples. The press guy was just so in love with him. On gun control, you could count on one hand the number of reporters in Ottawa who would dare to say, yeah, going after farmers and duck hunters is a dumb idea. But just to be global warming, by far the biggest issue on which you have this consensus media. The media has a total consensus. There's so much peer pressure there. It's like, you know, a group of high school girls comparing, you know, a fashion. If you're not doing exactly what the other Heathers are doing, you're uncool. That's how they are with global warming.
Yeah, that part of it, too, on a daily basis, and I've been part of it, is the the consensus happens because you want to protect yourself against your boss. When your boss sees you doing a story that nobody else is doing, you know you're going to get a a ton of, you know, and everybody else is doing this one story, A story, and you're doing B story. And your boss says, well, how come? You got to explain yourself. Then you probably have to do a small matching story to match what everybody else is saying is the big news and all this sort of stuff. So it just kind of one of the, and that's the daily kind of breaking news consensus. So I think you've really hit the nail on the head there with this consensus media. That's how that happens on a daily basis, Ezra. But you're quite right as well that on the broader basis, it's this Heather's thing, and
let me please you, Master.
Yeah, and yeah. It's, you know, you don't dare stick your neck up.
The other thing, Ezra, is, and we talked about this last week on the show, and we always refer to as the mainstream, sort of as the downstream. I think we've added a new word now called the old stream, literally, because they're just so out of touch with how the world is working, whether it's the internet and all the other things. So it's the downstream, old stream media. But last week we touched a little bit on the issues of involving the election out here in British Columbia, Ezra, where, you know, the big fear-mongering started immediately in the media, you know, oh, the split in the vote, we're going to split the vote. And, you know, we laughed about pulling out the script. Maybe it was the week before weren't here.
I don't think it was the Christy Clark election.
Oh, Christy
Clark being elected.
And, you know, they go through their file and they pull out the script
when John Cummins became the leader of the BC Conservative Party.
Right. And, you know, but that's you know, and our position here at Roadkill was, you know, split the vote. 50% of British Columbians don't vote. They're looking for a playground to come play in, you know? And let's split the vote, please. Let's do that. Maybe something good will happen. But there is this script mentality of, oh, well, this is the song we have
to
sing.
No knockout punch. There was the script. Boy, oh, boy. That was from the...
You know, but here's, you know, let me add to that. For the first week or two of the campaign, I was watching, and a theme of the consensus media was Harper's in a bubble. He's protecting himself from interactions with real interactions. We journalists must penetrate that bubble so that we can bring reality to his scripted world. That was the theme.
And the
irony, the incredible irony was, the reporters, one of their beefs was Harper was only taking four or five questions a day from the pack. They were so, well, the Greek word is omphaloskeptic, which they were so interested in their own belly buttons that it would be like this. Mr. Harper, why are you only allowing us four questions? Okay, thanks for that. Next question. Okay, question number two. Mr. Harper, why are you only allowing us four questions? Okay, that's your second question. Third question, Mr. So, I mean, if they only had four or five questions, they chose to ask their questions about why they had no questions, instead of asking about the economy or the war in Libya or fighter jets or the high speed or whatever issue. These reporters were so concerned about Harper getting out of his bubble that they joined him in another. They said, come into our bubble where instead of talking about your script, you'll talk about our script. Were they so unaware of what they looked like, that they were the crazy ones in the bubble? Does any real Canadian in the country give a damn about how many questions a certain reporter is allowed to ask? And if that really is the problem, why the hell would you spend your few questions asking about how few questions you have? I mean, who's in the bubble, I ask you?
Yeah.
A politician staying on his own message, or a reporter who wants to talk about his own troubles as a journalist? Unbelievable lack of awareness of oneself.
Well, and then they give us, you know, all of us rebel sorts, you know, such great fodder to laugh at the downstream, old stream media, because they just don't get it. We did talk about that before.
Yes, yeah.
And we had a very lively discussion with sort of a good friend of Roadkill, but he's an admitted NDPer, John Twigg here, who raised that as, you know, oh, nasty, nasty little Harper. But, you know, my take on what Harper was doing is, okay, the media, the old stream media needs training, and is Papa Harper going to help them with their problem?
Well, you know, it's funny. The election campaign that I covered for the Western Standard, it was exactly the opposite. I don't think the media quite often knew what to make of what he was, because he was that you know how successful that campaign was, Ezra, and it was the 5 years ago that campaign that first got him into power, and they didn't understand what was going on, and I so they were kind of flummoxed some of the times, and at the end of press conferences, Harper would say, any more questions? Nobody would have any more. Okay, then, I'm going to make some statements. And he would start reacting to things that the Liberal leader had said regarding Quebec or something like that, and basically spoon-feeding these guys and making very good points, very interesting things on the news of the day that really these guys should have been up on. So it was quite something. That never made it into my story because there was so many other aspects of the campaign that were so marvelous at the time that and that the mainstream media were missing about how Harper was realigned sort of the image of what it meant to be Canadian and was had taken the sense of national identity, the flag away from the Liberals and was trying to make that a mum and pop Main Street.
Well, let me interrupt you there. I mean, just what you've just said, what a great reminder you've given me, Terry, of how, for example, Stephen Harper has absorbed what was truly the Liberal calling card for 50 years, which is nationalism and patriotism. And he's done it his own way. He's focused on Arctic sovereignty, rebuilding the armed forces, and a muscular foreign policy. I mean, the fact that we are there in Libya with jets and 500 support troops is amazing, and he plays these patriotic cards, and he's got the flag everywhere. And now you have Michael Ignatieff on the very first day of the campaign, and this was missed by the consensus media, saying he was, quote, embarrassed, unquote, by Canada's reputation internationally. So you've got the Liberals playing the anti-patriotic card. So Harper owns the flag. I remember hating that flag as the Pearson pennant. Oh, it's so red, it's so liberal. No. Don't hate it. Steal it.
Yeah.
And because the flag came to be associated in my mind with so many big government liberal ideas that offended me. But now Harper has retaken that word. And look at that. He's made, I mean, even tonight, what does Ignatieff want to talk to the country about? He's bitching that we didn't get a seat on the UN Security Council. Seriously.
Yes.
Is that you've got, this is your first hello, your first impression to most people, and what do you want to talk about? We, some beauty contest at the UN with a bunch of dictatorships 6 months ago. You know, I bet you most Canadians, when they think of foreign affairs, they think what we're doing in Afghanistan, maybe what we're doing in Libya, the Olympics. I think there's a bit of pride that we're flexing some muscles, we're punching above our weight again for the first time in decades, and this guy wants to bitch about us not getting on the security camp. I mean, is that really on people's radar? Is that on anyone's top 50 list?
Well, I think it's worse than that, Ezra, because it shows how out of touch he is with people, because most people are questioning what the hell is the UN doing these days anyway, getting involved in so many things that we don't want it to be in that we're having to pay for.
I don't think people even think about the UN, and I don't think Harper brought it up. I wasn't paying close attention to the whole debate. I was kept falling asleep in the middle of it. But I mean, I just don't think normal people give a damn. Mm. I mean, maybe political junkies like the three of us on the phone now, but I just don't think Joe Average, and that's who you're going for. I mean, you've got every day in question period and in the political reportage to talk about your niche political inside baseball. But the campaign, especially the leaders' debate, especially the last 2 weeks, is your chance to talk to Joe Normal. And I just don't think talking about an obscure NGO called Rights and Democracy or bitching about UN Security Council is going to move a single damn vote. And it was interesting. I just flipped over and I saw the CBC ad issue panel, which I respect. I think Chantal Hebert is smart. I think Andrew Cohen is smart. And I was interested to see that they said, you know, this was Ignatius' chance, and Cohen, who's no fan of Harper, thought Ignatieff blew it. So that to me is a bit of a gut check. Is this just my conservative sensibilities who thought Harper won? Well, if Chantal Hebert and Andrew Quinn are saying, yikes, Ignatieff missed it, I think he did miss it.
Mm. Yeah. One thing that may emerge as an issue for the conservatives, it certainly goes against the gloom and doom and all the negativity that came from Leighton and Ignatieff tonight, is there was a story just out of Paris that was in today's papers about the Organization for Economic Cooperation and Development that said that Canadians rank second of all the OECD countries after only Iceland, and having positive experiences, feeling well-rested, being treated with respect, smiling, doing something interesting, and experiencing enjoyment. Our 15-year-olds rank third in reading behind only Korea and Finland. We have Canadians are the most tolerant people in the developed world. Apparently, at 84% on average, Canadians report the highest community tolerance of minority groups, ethnic groups, migrants, gays and lesbians, where the average is 61%. Really good stuff. The only really worrying thing about this long list of statistics is that our fertility rate is now down to 1.68 children per woman. And I know, Ezra, you're doing something about that. And which is below even the OECD average of 1.74, and easily the lowest of any Anglophone OECD country. So that's troubling for the future of Canada, but it helps explain why we need such a high rate of immigration as well.
Well, that's very interesting reports. Look, I think that, you know what's funny is I wrote this the other day in the Sun Media. I said Michael Ignatieff once called himself Rip Van Winkle. You know the short story about the man who falls asleep for 20 years, wakes up, and doesn't quite realize the world has changed. Well, that's what Ignatieff said about himself, because he left Canada in the 60s, and he came back 34 years later. And I think his ideas, his understanding, his experiences of this country froze in time when he left. And so many of his ideas are stuck in that Trudeau was just about to get rolling on these big schemes that we all had to live through. We all had to try out what a national energy program was actually like. We all had to try out what overspending and high taxes was actually like. We all had to try out what this, you know, one world government, love the UN, obey what the Security Council says, sign Kyoto was like, while he was gallivanting around Europe. We went through the Charlottetown Accord. We went through the GST debate. We went through the free trade debate. We went through all this stuff while he was an absentee. So he's come back, and he says, oh, yeah, I can pick up right where we left off. Well, no, Rip Van Winkle.
Well, we also want to know how trustworthy he is. Kate McMillan, Small Dead Animals, had an item a couple of days ago, in which Ignatieff is quoted in 2004, he told the Glasgow Herald, quote, "I am an American Democrat, period. I will vote for Kerry in November," end of quote.
And that means one of three things. Either one, he was lying to the reporter, you know, or fibbing, or just telling some tall tale, which is pretty bizarre. Or he actually did vote for Kerry. And either he did so legally as a U.S. citizen, or he did so illegally. Now, I think it's very unlikely that he would have illegally voted. It just is too bizarre to believe. So either he is a U.S. citizen and had the right to vote and did, or he was fibbing to the Glasgow Herald back in 2004. That either option is weird. And he also voted in the U.K. elections for the Labour Party, and there's records of that, so we know that's true. He claims to have voted in Canada when he was away. I frankly don't believe him. I didn't give any details. But even tonight, on the debate, he said, oh, my family came here from Russia. Sorry, that's not true. His family came, fled Russia, as you know. His grandfather was a minister of the Tsar. He's a count. He's a Russian count. He's part of that aristocracy. So naturally, his family fled the Russian Revolution in 1919. They fled, but not to Canada. They fled to the UK. They went to London. They were not poor. They had £25,000 sterling waiting for them, which is about $2 million in today's money. So tonight on TV, he said, my family came here from Russia. Well, no, they didn't. They came to London, England, and they were there until 1928. And then they came to Canada, and they were not poor, as he says in one of his TV ads. They were extremely wealthy. They immediately all went to Upper Canada College and other fancy schools, bought, you know, estates. He's just, and how do I know this is all BS? Well, because he wrote a book about it called The Russian Album. So many of the things that we know about Michael Ignatieff are from his own book. I mean, his favorite subject is writing about himself and his family. He writes very lovingly about himself, and so in 2011, when he's running for office, if he wants to recreate his backstory as some schlub who just came off the boat, worked up from scratch, sorry, that's BS. He is a son of privilege and wealth.
Ezra Levant, your show is going to be centered on freedom and all of its manifestations. It'll be on the new Sun News Network. Where in British Columbia or Metro Vancouver will we be able to see this?
Anybody who is a subscriber to Shaw Cable, which is that the dominant?
Yeah, that's a big one.
You're going to get it. I think it's free, in fact, for the first 6 months, so hopefully we'll get you hooked. I think it's going to be so much fun. Let me just say one last thing before we jump off the phone.
Yeah.
We're going to be different in this way. During the day, you get up at the crack of, you know, dawn. We're going to have hard news all day. Boom, what's going on? Get it quick. Get it now. Beautiful graphics. Great announcers all day. But then that's where it changes. At 5 p.m. Eastern, 2 p.m. Pacific, we shift gears. We're getting out of the hard news, and we're getting into what we call straight talk, which is what we're doing here tonight. No BS, no political correctness, viewpoints. And so you've got opinionated guys and gals. It's going to be a little bit like talk radio that way, but TV. And that's different from the bland, let's have three MPs on, let's have three pundits on, which is the boring formula of CBC Newsreel and CTV Newsnet. And, you know, they just, it's almost like you could read the script in advance on any of those political shows. We are going to be different because you're going to have an opinionated guy like me and Charles Adler just giving her every night. You will know where we're coming from. And I think Canadians are going to say, it's about bloody time.
Good. You're going to sizzle, yeah, that's right. Are you?
Well, you tell me. Okay. I mean, I'm talking tough now. You let me know in a week's time. I mean, we're coming on a Monday.
All right, Ezra, I'll break a leg.
Thanks, my friends. Thanks for the call.
Bye-bye.
Right, good day.
Ezra Levant and
Hot
with the Sun News Network. And if you see some of the graphics associated with the network, they got meteors and fireballs circling the earth and everything.
It's going to be a workout.
That's going to be something. And it's bound to be exciting and provocative television. And
Now, come on, not with Ezra. Let's not go. Well, they're going to really have to work hard to wind him up.
I first met Ezra when he was a university student. And during that time, I believe he published a book, too, called Youthquake. Maybe he had just graduated from university. First of his many books. Of course, more recently, he's known as the author of Shakedown, the expose
of
the human wrongs industry in Canada, and then the author of that brilliant ethical oil book, recasting the debate about the Alberta oil sands.
He changed the debate.
Single-handedly.
Of that debate, yeah.
That's right.
So provocative, yes.
Yes, provocative. And he kind of, you know, when he enters the room, he doesn't say a word, but he's there. He has has an aura about him, and he's a special man, and I'm sure he'll do very well. And I, for one, will try to check him out. 2 o'clock is maybe probably in the later when it's broadcast again later, try to check him out. And I'd urge people to do that as well. And I'm sure we'll be able to keep up our relationship with him. He'll be a very busy man, though, with an hour show every day.
Well, but roadkill's got a rate somewhere, Terry. We're about to find out,
aren't
we?
That's true. That's good. Yeah. And so anyway, I brought up that thing about the OECD, Canadians most tolerant and developed world, and this high ranking of positive experience. We also have above average negative experiences of pain, worry, sadness, stress, and depression. So while we're having wonderful positive experiences, we're also having
negative experiences.
And I just put that down to the political divide in this country. The people of the right are having all the positive experiences, and the nitpickers and snide remarkers of the left are having the above average negative experiences.
Brilliant observation.
Okay, so I put that there.
I concur.
Now, we also talked with Ezra about Turtle Island, and that's something that I dug up and found just because I was kind of curious after Elizabeth May was not allowed on any of the big network debate, and she wasn't really getting any coverage, and she was complaining about that. And I said, you know what? I said this to myself. Terry, I bet you nobody in the media has really taken time to read her her party platform, and I bet you I can find a whopper in there. That's what I said to myself, Carrie. You believe me, because I talk to myself. I work by myself. I'm all by myself at home all during the day, and I talk to myself.
He does.
And I said, Terry, I bet you I can find a whopper.
And I get little notes on the email every once in a
while. That's right. And so I looked through that. You know, some of the stuff was actually pretty good. There were some economic things that were very conservative-oriented and rational and things like that. And, well, okay, there's were sounding pretty good. And then I get to this true democracy thing, and okay, well, that's interesting. Consider, you know, first past the post, get rid of that. Consider proportional representation. Well, you know, lots of people talk about that. And then I get to this thing about we have to give more citizenship rights to First Nations and Indigenous peoples of this continent, Turtle Island. And I went, bingo. And I said, first off, I'd never heard of that expression. Had you?
No. Well, I had, but I have to admit, I had about a 5-minute rip-roar laugh.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah.
Well, the apparently, and I looked this up in Wikipedia.
And I have a brooch I should have worn in honor of this. I will next time we're together, Terry. I have the perfect brooch.
A beautiful turtle.
My Turtle Island brooch. It's going to just become my thing. I guess, just to remind me of where I live.
Yeah, apparently Turtle Island is an English language translation, ostensibly, of many Native American tribes' term for the continent of North America. But there's little historical evidence of that. And I have a feeling it's more likely that it was a made-up term. A guy wrote a book about 30 or 40 years ago, much as that African-American Kwanzaa holiday was essentially just made up out of thin air a few decades ago. I think this Turtle Island thing was made up
Don't forget the Queen Charlotte Islands, as they once were known.
Absolutely. Listen, they were called Haida Gwaii back then, and there's absolute evidence that they've always been called Haida Gwaii. So fine, you know, we decided to change. I don't think that was a great idea, but we've done it. But I don't think there was any consensus among our Aboriginal pre-Columbian contact people about this being Turtle Island. There was, by the way, in the Caribbean, a Turtle Island. That's Tortuga.
Yes.
Right? And that is the Turtle Island. But I found my whopper. I wrote about it. We had a little blog. And then Kate McMillan of Small Dead Animals cross-linked to it, and she came up with a beautiful headline. Her headline on that item is, "Because nothing says electable like renaming a continent." Subhead, "Great moments in pandering from the Green Party platform." I thought, oh, she's brilliant. That's really, really good. We'll have Kate on the show, I think, one day.
Soon, I hope.
Because I refer to her a lot, and I do get a lot of good ideas from her, and I'm glad, very pleased that she cross-posted on this after I alerted her to our posting on Roadkill Radio. Carrie, you've been in contact with an interesting man from the prairies somewhere about a video that came up.
It wasn't a video that came out. It was a news item, Terry.
Okay.
And I should tell our listeners, you know, we appreciate all your mail. We get loads of mail from you. And there's some real zingers in there. And, you know, I looked at this little heads-up notice that Clint Hutton was putting out to give an awareness to what was going on in his schools. And I actually invited him to join us here tonight. So, Clint, are you on the phone with us?
Yes, I am.
Hi, Clint. Can you speak up loudly, please?
Oh, yes. Can you hear me okay?
Yes, we can now. I'm Terry O'Neill. Nice to meet you, Clint.
Yeah, you too.
Now, you sent us this heads up, and you actually put a letter out about it, complaining about the news reporting that was going on CTV. But something interesting happened at one of your local schools. Can you tell our listeners what happened?
Are you talking about the CTV news?
Not a local school.
The CTV news one.
Well, that was actually in Ontario.
Okay.
That was an Ontario story. SWAT team did a mock lockdown. One of the officers pretended and dressed up as, I guess, someone...
terrorist or madman or
some kind of a violent person, and the other guys came in with their automatic weapons and all their gear and
put the school in a lockdown.
Yeah, and I don't know exactly what happened, but I found out since I talked to you the other day that they had one in Calgary as well.
Okay, so this is going on across the country then, at least in two places.
Like it, yeah.
And what struck me, because you also in your letter to us linked the CTV news footage of this. And I'm sitting there going, looking at what's going on in the schools. They were, of course, rationalizing this as a result of Columbine. And one of the school employees interviewed actually said this. This is on the CTV news video. Okay, now you have to appreciate, because the video gives you a little bit of insight. This guy goes into the school, either deranged or a terrorist, is going to do some harm, the equivalent of Columbine. The students are to practice what is to go on in a circumstance like this. The SWAT team descends down upon the school.
And the students, basically the teacher locks everybody into their classroom. Right.
So there's guns and SWAT members all through the schools looking for, because they've changed their tactics apparently, people. They don't secure the perimeter now. They actually go inside.
Which is good. Yes.
But, you know, one of the things that the school representative said at the end of this, and I think this is what struck you too, Clint, was she said, we don't want to panic anyone, but we want them to know that this is a very real possibility. Like, this is your new reality. And the first thought that came to my mind was, number one, well, if this is a real possibility and I have kids in the school, then I'm going to send them to school with a gun.
You know, you want to do that.
There's a simple solution to this.
If that's a real possibility, then arm them.
Arm the children. Arm my kids. They're good shots anyway. But
Clint, you had a different objection, I think. What was your thought?
I don't have my little letter that I wrote in front of me. Do you have it?
Yeah. Well, you went on about the pharmaceutical factor, which is something I did not consider before.
Yeah, okay. Well, my concern right away when I saw that is that, and in a lot of cases where there has been violence, whether it's a school or wherever, a lot of times it's an individual that's on a doctor-prescribed medication that's carrying out this violent act. And this seems to be always left out of the news coverage.
Well, and as a matter of fact, you informed me, and I thought I was pretty up on this, but the Tabor shooting that was in Alberta, and Mr. Tabor, the father in the situation, came to your school, did he not?
Mr. Lang,
yeah. Sorry, yeah. Langer.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, Mr. Well, that was one of the things that my daughter was in grade 4, and the general public was invited to come and hear Dale Lang's story and his message. And my daughter I had two daughters in school at that time, and one was in just the lowest grade in that school. And he, at the end of his talk, which is mostly about forgiveness and forgiving the person that carried out the act, was his main message, which was pretty amazing. But he said, if this could happen in Tabor, it could happen anywhere, even here. And that's kind of where he left his talk at. And I don't suppose he meant to scare anybody, but I thought that was quite a message for someone about grade 4 to have to deal with. And anyway, I talked to the principal afterwards, and I had found out that the kid that shot him, or shot his son, had been prescribed a medication called Dexedrine, which is an SSRI. I don't know if your listeners are up on all this stuff, but it's what they call a selective serotonin reuptake inhibitor, and what it does is lets that serotonin stick around longer. And then if you go off of something like that, your whole brain, you can either react to too much of it or not having it at all.
And you know what, Clint, that was the part that got me going on what you had said, because I did a little bit of research. And these psychotic drugs, because we are increasingly making them available to our youth, there's no long-term studies associated with what the adverse effects are these. And I looked up the drug that was involved in the Lang murder. And one of the negative effects is that it can produce psychotic episodes, you know? So I think we've got two different issues going on here. Number one, is this an appropriate message to be bringing to the schools? I mean, you know, having locked down armed guards, you know, SWAT members, running through your schools with your school personnel saying, this is a reality, this is going to happen. You know, where do we go and do we train the adults? You know, all these, because are we putting ideas into the minds of children?
Well, it could happen because more and more of these kids are on medications.
Hmm.
But they're leaving that part of it out.
Yeah.
Like, I hate to be critical of Dale Lang, but he didn't, I don't think he actually knew at that time.
Hmm.
But I think, personally, whoever it was, but in his case, something should have been said to balance things out, that the shooter was on doctor-prescribed medications. And that never comes out in the news for
some. Well, that would be a great deterrent for drugs in the kid's situation. But anyway, Clint, I want to really say how much I appreciated your letter and the thoughtfulness of that was contained in it. You made me aware of another factor that I hadn't considered before, and you're right. I do think that this requires more discussion. That it has to be more honest reporting about the effects that go on, and I just really appreciate you taking the time and to be involved in making sure that people are given the tools to think outside the box or what's presented to us. So,
could I mention one more thing real quick?
Sure, sure.
Just to balance this out, there is a story, and I don't think we maybe can give me time to really talk about it, but in southern Alberta, there was a family, this was about 15 years ago, where maybe you've followed it, I don't know, where the mom was bipolar, and she committed suicide, and they had about 10 kids, and two of them were also bipolar and on medication.
Mm-hmm.
They ended up taking this mineral supplement on the advice of a neighbor that was a livestock mineral.
Yep, actually we have done a little bit on that story before, so I am going to stop you there about, you know, and you're opening up a whole other kettle of fish that we like to talk about here on Roadkill, and that's, you know, what are we doing? Are we, you know,
but
with our food supply and all the rest?
Yeah. To the doctor prescribed SSRIs and antidepressants.
Yep. No, there's a huge problem happening out there, and this discussion just we don't have time for it tonight because you need a whole hour for it. But
I just wanted to mention it.
Yeah,
thanks.
Good stuff. Thanks again, Clint.
Thanks for talking to me.
Yep.
Okay.
Good night.
Thanks for joining us here on Roadkill Radio, and you are listening to Roadkill Radio here on the Roadkill Radio
Network.
Soon to be, maybe. Please send us an email at roadkillradio@live.ca if you have any questions, comments, queries, criticisms. Any more questions, comments,
congratulations.
Questions, comments, queries, criticisms, and congratulations. There you go. Good.
That works.
Okay, that works. That's five.
I'm the positive part
of that study, right?
Five. Yeah.
That's five. That's very good. Yes. Well, we want all that sort of stuff. And by the way, speaking of criticisms, I find it kind of ironic, I guess, that Elizabeth May, we're getting back to Elizabeth May again.
You just like you the know, Turtle Island thing.
Turtle Island. She says in her party platform, we will never, never place the pursuit of power above principle. We will not allow partisan politics to get in the way of good ideas and needed action. We agree with Canadians who say it's time for parties and parliament to stop bickering and get on with the job of governing. Okay? Well, you know,
does she use the word bickering? Is this the B word?
I guess so, yes.
Everybody's using the B word.
Ezra
used the bitch word.
Okay. And anyway, but today, in response to not being, somebody asked her for a comment on how the leaders' debate went, and she called it a sad spectacle of a partial leaders' debate. Like, is that bickering? Is that being critical? Is that being political?
Yeah.
I guess she can't. You know what? My message to her is, if you are a party leader, you cannot avoid being political.
Hmm.
I don't blame you for saying that's a sad spectacle, leaders' debate. I don't blame you for saying you thought it was spectacularly non-engaging, flat, predictable set of exchanges. That could be true. And I think that's very sensible. But Elizabeth May, when you say that you will never allow partisan politics to get in the way of good ideas and needed action, I say, take a pill.
It's not sort. Well, that ain't leadership material, that's right. If that's what song
you know
you're
what?
Singing.
I just, you know what? That's naive. And it's part of
phony.
The game.
It's phony.
It's part of it. Partisan politics is part of it. You've entered it. You are playing partisan politics by being a leader of a partisan political party, Elizabeth.
That wanted to be part of a leadership debate.
Okay. Now, if you don't believe in partisan politics, you don't believe in party politics.
And you had no part to play in the...
And partisan politics.
You got it. Yeah, we could really part this up.
That's right. So maybe I'm being too cruel on her because I'm kind of nuts on this Turtle Island
thing. No, you know what, Terry? You're not being too cruel. That's so Canadian. What we want is strong leadership.
Yeah.
That is marshmallow wallowing.
Wow, that's, you're right. She's trying to have it both ways.
Yeah.
That's what she's trying to do.
Let's call it for what it is.
I want to be able to criticize the other parties. I want to be able to have my voice heard. I want my policies heard. Oh, but I don't believe in partisan politics. I just believe in good ideas.
Well,
if you believe in good ideas, set up a think tank.
Yeah.
Have a green think tank.
And maybe we'll give you a dollar of our vote.
Yeah, that's right. Okay, so... So there's the end of my tirade on Elizabeth May and the Green Party. So good luck, Elizabeth May, and a smart idea conducting your campaign, a national campaign from an island riding in the far west coast of Canada. Riding, by the way, that's picked out for because of detailed polling that showed that it was the most the voters there were the most acutely environmentally conscious of anywhere in Canada. But for a federal party leader to be sort of isolated way out on a riding where there's lots of islands and no direct flights.
She picked her part of Canada.
That's right. And
perfectly.
And she's got a party with it.
She got a party in that part of it.
Anyway, good luck, Elizabeth May. And or actually, call her Elizabeth whatever, not Elizabeth May.
Oh.
May, whatever.
May, whatever.
Whatever, whomever.
June.
Okay. May she or may she not. So, Roadkill Radio, let me just check the emails. Nobody's sending us any emails tonight. So
they're all exhausted after the leadership debate.
Maybe that's right.
They're going, is there any hope for this country, is what they're
that's
saying.
Right.